All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fucking ears, what the fucksters, what's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast. I'm going remote. I'm remote right now. I'm not in a bunker. I'm not off the grid. I am in my hometown for the holidays, Albuquerque, New Mexico. Today on the show, Kyle Dunnigan. Very funny. I enjoy talking to him. I like watching him. He's a funny guy, funny comedian. Oddball. He's on the show. We recorded it a little while ago back in the garage. But how you guys doing? How's the holidays? I'm actually, to be honest with you, I feel okay. What did I get? Is it important what we get? Are we talking about material things? All I know is right now I'm sitting in a room about a block away from where I grew up at the Los Poblanos Historic Inn and Lavender Farm. I tell you, I'm about done with lavender. You stay at this place, there's lavender in everything. There's lavender in the tea, in the shampoo, in the conditioner, in the soap. There's everywhere there's lavender, and it's starting to turn on me. But that's not a criticism. I'm just saying that certain things you can hit a limit with. Lavender and I think crack cocaine are good examples. For some reason, patchouli I've been wearing most of my life. I don't even notice it anymore. But then again, like if I wore lavender, I would probably get more reaction. People would think I'm weird. And if I smoke crack, I would have no friends. I don't know if there's a real connection, but that's a connection. And outside of that, it's been lovely. And right now, I'm looking out. Snow is falling down. And in Los Angeles, you don't see much of this, much snow. It's really, I'm very happy. I'm happy that it's snowing. I'm happy that this is a couple days after the Christmas holiday. I'm happy for a lot of things. A lot of things are scary and a lot of things are awful in the world, culturally, politically. But it's snowing in New Mexico today, and I'm glad I brought my boots. It's the little things, folks. It's the little things. The boots, very exciting. And I have not gotten a cold yet. Sarah the Painter had a little cold. I did not get it. I don't know why I didn't get it. I'm not complaining. I'm not going to think too deeply about it, because sometimes when you think like, what did I do to not get a cold? Something in your cellular makeup says, you want one? We can set it up. You can kind of feel it's happening. You know, you feel that nag, like, am I going to beat it? Am I not going to beat it? Am I on the cusp? Sometimes you're on the cusp for a couple weeks. I think I'm still on the cusp, but maybe I should just stay in the proactive thinking. Like, you know, like I'm on top of this. I'm fighting it on a cellular level. I have that control. I can tap right in to my lizard brain, go past the other stuff, maybe get a little cortisol going, a little adrenaline going, you know, get the cells excited. And yeah, that's what I'm doing. That's what I'd like to think. I'm willing my way through my connection with a very ancient part of my brain into not having a cold. And once I master that, I am never going to die. See how that goes? See how you can just keep going with that? And then you realize like, I'm fucking lying to myself. So I was here in New Mexico for 2 days. I saw my father, who turned 80, sat with him at a large party, his wife's family's house. A lot of Christmas stuff going on. There was like a bunch of kids, a bunch of grownups, several generations of people doing a present thing. And there was my dad sitting alone by himself, off to the deep in another room, just sitting there being my dad, looking at him over there. Just what's he doing? Thinking? What's he up to? Why isn't he engaging? So I was there to see him. So I naturally went over and sat with him for a while. But I don't know. He's 80. And I think, he's withdrawing a bit deeper into the mind. I wouldn't say that he's becoming Zen-like or Buddha-like, unless sort of a nirvana or complete mindfulness involves some compulsive self-judgment, self-loathing, and shoulda, woulda, coulda-ness. But he is, he has mellowed. He's okay. He's older, and it was nice seeing him. I hope that you people were able to spend time with your families and tolerate it. This was a little more than that. I think as I get older and things start to fade a bit, it's nice to see him, but it was also honestly nice to leave, and we had just enough time, and he seems to feel the same way. Not in a hostile way, but when I'm like, I'm going to go, is that all right? I'm probably not going to see you again this trip. He's like, yeah, yep, good, great. I'm like, great, perfect. So did I say what I got for Christmas? I got a cashmere sweater. I got a hat. I got, what else did I get? Oh, Sarah, the painter, finally gave me a painting. Only took 4 years. It's a nice painting. I'm going to put that up in the house. What else did I get? I got a lot of cards. Not as many as usual, but maybe it's an address thing, or maybe it's because I don't send people anything, and maybe it's because I don't really give too many presents, you know, and I don't go to parties often. So if you're sitting there wondering why you're not popular, or why you don't get Christmas cards, or why you don't get gifts, do you give them? I find that reciprocity usually leads to that sort of circle of socialization. If you just sit there and you go through your cards and you wonder, why didn't I not get as many? Why not as many presents? How come no one's wishing me a happy Christmas or a Merry Hanukkah? How come that's not happening? Well, did you do it? Oh, yeah. It's not all about me. I've got to care about other people and do the polite thing. If you're not doing that, you're probably going to be in Christmas card Siberia, all alone with just one or two from your family. I don't really know how long to hold on to the pictures of my friends' families. Do you know, if you don't have a mantle or you're not pinning them up and they're just kind of hanging around, it's nice to see everybody growing every year, but how long do you keep those pictures? And then I feel bad if I throw them away and I end up keeping them for a long time. Then I find them a few years later. And then it's sort of like, oh, remember when they were like that? Why didn't I throw that away? It's hard to throw away pictures of people that you know and their kids all dressed up posing for photographs. But you can do it. When's the right time to do that? I don't know. Do I have an email to read? Maybe I do. Subject line, intergenerational Marin. Hey, Mark, I've been a longtime fan, and although you don't know me or anything about me after listening to your podcast for so long, I feel as though I know you like a friend. You have a way of breaking the barrier between presenter and listener. I've been able to relate to so many of your experiences of addiction, loss, and jealousy, and that way you share them so openly and honestly. I'm going through a divorce myself, my first. You are much more experienced in this area than me. Not proud of that. It's not a notch on my belt. And listening to your podcast eases some of those lonely days and nights. I wanted to share a moment with you. The other day, my 7-year-old son came home and said, "Hey, Dad, you know that podcast you always listen to, WTF? He pronounces it as a word, WTF. That Mark guy reads a turkey story for kids. Are you sure it was him?" I said. He said, "Yeah, the guy with the mustache and the glasses." We looked it up, and sure enough, there you were reading Turkey Trouble. My parents have said that they enjoy watching you on Glow and think you are one of the best characters of the show. So you're transcending generations and becoming known to all. Hope you're coming to do more shows in Australia soon. Happy holidays, Glenn. Well, that's exciting. Everybody knows me for a different reason. That's nice. And then, like, you know, it's almost like the other things that I do that they don't know is kind of like my secret life for those people who know about that and not about the other thing. Anyway, folks, I have to hit the road. We got to pack up. It's amazing that we travel with so much stuff. Like, it just keeps growing. All this stuff is growing as we move. And we've only been here 3 days, and it's almost like we live in this room. That's how we travel. So, folks, stay safe. And right now, hold on. Someone's at the door. You'll get it?
Yeah, it's a maintenance.
It's a maintenance guy?
Yeah.
Oh, they're coming to check the hot water as we leave? Okay. Hey. Oh. Okay. Oh, okay. Tankless water heater in the ceiling. Thank you. All right. How you doing, buddy? So that was a little real life moment. We didn't have hot water for the last couple hours, so the guy came in with a ladder, and he's going to go up into the ceiling now, and we're about to leave, but now I feel like maybe we should stay just to take another shower. Okay, so now I'm going to share with you my conversation with Kyle Dunnigan. You can follow him on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, and he's very active on all three, particularly Instagram, where he does a lot of funny stuff. So this is me and Kyle Dunnigan. It was a very fun conversation. Enjoy it. Mm-hmm. Are you all right, buddy? You tired?
No, I just like kind of meditated though, so I'll pump up.
What do you mean kind of meditated? When you drove over, you slept through?
Well, I got here early. I don't like to be late.
Oh, yeah, I don't either.
It makes me panic. So I have like a meditation app that I put on.
Headspace?
No, it's called Insight.
Oh, geez. What's the difference? Did you try Headspace?
I did Headspace, which I like, but I don't like them. You watch cartoons and stuff like that.
What? Oh, I didn't even get that far. I put the app on my phone.
Yeah.
And I guess I didn't open it. Like I made the move to meditate, but didn't take the action.
Do you don't meditate at all?
No.
Yeah.
Why?
Are we recording now?
Sure.
Is this the show?
Kinda. Have you listened to it before?
I have.
What year did you start? I'm older than you, right?
90, you're, what are you, 40? 47.
Oh, you're getting up there.
What? Thank you. I had a midlife crisis, by the way, this time last year.
It's about the time.
Full on midlife, which I think is good to have midlife crisis. Chrysi.
Yeah, I don't know that. I think I panicked right through mine.
So you're in the winter of your life.
Yeah. It might be the final quarter. This might be it. It might be the... You know,
it makes you feel alive. Like, I feel alive now.
Yeah, well, it's going to keep getting more.
Yeah.
But it becomes a sad thing, that feeling of being alive when you know time's running out. You're like, ugh.
I do think about it. I think we should think about it.
Well, I mean, I know what's happening. But, like, it's sort of like we all know we're going to die. But we don't know of what. And when you get older and things start to ache and creak a little bit, you're like, this body's only built for so much.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing. You can't ignore it when you start losing your vision and the aches and stuff. But other cultures that face death, unlike us, they are less stressed out. We push it away, but you know it's there. But then we got...
Well, I think Canadians are better at it because they know, like, well, I've got health care. And, and there's probably some sort of... elderly care that you sort of like, there's not the crisis of like, what the fuck are we going to do when you get sick or no one wants to deal with you anymore?
Yeah.
Well, they got a state thing that you just go check in and that's that.
Yeah. Why doesn't it work? Why do you think it doesn't work here?
Because there's no money in it.
Is that it?
Of course. What do you mean? Why is there not national health care? Because you'd have to basically, shut down the insurance market. Move it to the government.
Is it that simple? Is there anything else? Is it just that, you think?
That's just that.
I can't figure out. Was Obama sitting in this chair that I'm in?
He was in that chair, but a different garage.
Oh.
What
but
do you
this
mean?
Chair.
That
well,
chair,
I
yeah.
just
No, that was the chair, for sure.
Well, I need a minute to take that in.
Okay.
Obama just sat here, and now here I am.
Yeah. Hmm. What's going on with you in
relation? I need a minute. This has been like 20 seconds.
Sorry.
All right, I'm good.
It's shorter
it's
than we
cool,
thought.
Pretty cool, though. I thought I needed a minute, but it was actually 34 seconds.
So wait, how did the midlife crisis manifest itself?
I was writing for a show,
which
Sarah
one?
Silverman show on Hulu.
When you were dating or after?
After.
Yeah.
That's how...
Why was that tone? What was that tone? After.
What kind of tone? What would you say that tone was?
It was like, after, why'd you bring that up?
No, okay. That tone was just... To put a point on it, because
I think you might have been the last comic. I think you might have.
Yeah, I did it. I tend to do that. I tend to be the last comic.
Right.
Well, I'll tell you this.
Yeah, you get along with her though.
I do.
She's actually like really good at being friends with all her exes, I think.
Yeah, and I feel like also I realize working for her is our relationship. She must have been the boss because there was no. Transition feeling. And I was writing for Amy Schumer before that, and I got kind of in that writer loop, and then I realized how little time I had. I just suddenly felt my age, and I wanted to be a performer, and
that was always the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like to write. It's a great job.
You've done a lot of it, it seems.
Yeah, but I got caught in it because of there's stability, money, all that
stuff.
Sure, so.
Sure.
Then I was like, I'm going to focus on my,
I'm
going to focus on my Instagram. I just make Instagram videos. I'm going to do that for a year. Focus
this was
on
this was the midlife crisis?
Yeah.
So that doesn't sound very dark.
It didn't get that dark, but I tell you, I'm still feeling it.
Yeah.
Like, I get up at 6:30 every morning.
On purpose? Or just because you can't sleep anymore?
No, on purpose.
No, I mean, I get up at like 6 and I can't go back to sleep.
You just pop awake?
Yeah.
Are you awake?
That's
at
one
night
of the
too?
Gifts of being older, is that you just can't sleep in the morning anymore. No, I usually fall asleep at night. Like, boom.
Well, how many hours are you getting up at 6:30?
I think I probably average 6.
That's okay.
Yeah, it's not great, but it's just where I'm at.
And whatever's good for you.
It's not good for me. I mean, I'd like to be able to, like, on a weekend, maybe sleep till 9.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know. I think I'm doing a bit about it that, like, I don't really believe in God, but that's the one thing that makes me question, because it does seem like as you get older, and it happens to everybody, that you can't sleep as much. It's almost like God saying, like, hey, you might want to be up for this.
Yeah.
Not a lot of time
not
left.
Not much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't, you're not religious.
No. You say that like you were wary. Like, what if I said I am? But I'm open to your views.
I would get nervous.
I'm open to your views. Tell me, lost one. How do you explain your inability to suspend your disbelief?
I mean, you feel like such an idiot when someone's religious and they're looking at you thinking you go to hell. I sat next to a lady on the plane and
how'd this come up?
She had pamphlets. She was one of those people.
Oh, no, yeah.
And then she was, you know, listen and you try to be nice. You don't want to hurt someone's feelings.
No.
But then she said that I was wasting my life being a comedian.
Yeah.
And then I sort of turned and I thought, well, I'm going to defend
myself.
Why
would you say that?
Yeah. And so I was like, well, you know, how can you say people in Africa who never hear of Jesus go to hell?
Right.
And she said, there's the internet now.
Oh, it's only a matter of time before we get to them.
Right.
Yeah.
So
the missionary mindset. Like, they're not going to hell. We can still get there. We've got people down there. They're handing out the pamphlets.
We're working on the internet.
We're getting close, yeah.
And then people that just, if they're in a plane crash and they're the only survivor, they thank God for saving them. But then they're saying, like, he chose me over the other people he let die. Like, it doesn't make sense that there's any God watching and...
No, if there is, he's got a very wicked sense of humor.
He's hilarious.
Yeah.
Like, while we've been talking, eight children died.
Sure. I mean, probably more. But I don't even frame it that way. That the weird thing that, you know, it's prophesized that the world will end.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're all sort of, like, if it does sort of come to pass that it does, and it does seem biblical, a lot of us are going to feel pretty stupid.
Oh, yeah. But also, I would have a lot of questions.
Well, I mean, you probably won't get an opportunity to ask them unless you jump on board now.
Well, then
you can't do that Hail Mary pass when you see, you know, Jesus lowering out of the sky.
I think you can, as long as you say you believe in Jesus.
Right, you get in under
in under the water. That's what people on death row do. They get in. They
right.
Now I accept, and then they go to heaven.
Yeah, or at least they feel better in that last few seconds.
Yeah.
A little bit of optimism.
Would you be, if you were on death row, I think I would start to maybe get religious.
I don't know. I don't see my brain doing it. Like, I just, it's really a matter of being able to suspend the disbelief, which I don't sit around and be atheistic all the time. I do find it, you know, disconcerting when people of faith act within that faith, or they think they are, and it's clearly damaging to others and to the world in general, what they are able to rationalize.
Yeah.
But I don't begrudge them their faith. I just don't know that I can get there. And fortunately, as you get older, less things seem to matter. So you do get a little relief anyways.
I do feel relieved more now that I'm older.
Well, yeah, because things like, you know, a lot of the things that were so important and so horrifying and so painful that you look back at them and you're like, God, I was 12.
Yeah.
You know, I was 19.
Yeah.
And I thought that, you know.
Where'd you grow up?
Well, whose show is this?
I don't know.
I grew up in New Mexico.
Mine. You did?
And mostly, yeah. I was born in Jersey and lived 2 years in Alaska. My dad was in the service. And then from third grade to through high school, Albuquerque.
See, I met you in New York and you seem like such a New Yorker to me.
Well, no, I always had a line in because my family was from Jersey. So I was there all the time and New York was important to me. But I ended up there in like 89.
You were one of the big guys when I was in New York.
I was never a big guy in New York.
I know you think that you weren't, but you were. Like you and in the Dave.
In the alt scene, maybe. But in terms of like actual club work, why? When did you start? Let me see.
97.
Oh, well, yeah, I was.
Big time?
Well, I could work at the Cellar by then.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah.
That's when he started?
97,
That's when little Kyle Dunnigan showed up with his guitar?
Yeah. I was very pushed away from what I do naturally because I do love music. I do impressions. And these things were not looked upon as a good idea because back then to get a deal, you talk about yourself and your problems and everything. And
no, that's not. Oh, okay, right. Well, I get it.
Like managers were like, put the guitar down.
Well, what's your point of view?
Yes, right. All that. And really, I'm more like a Dana Carvey kind of guy.
Yeah.
And imagine Dana Carvey trying to do that stuff.
No, I know.
It doesn't quite fit.
Well, I mean, I guess New York is not the... it's weird. You should have went to San Francisco. Would have changed everything for you.
Yeah, I'm just now doing what I should be doing, I feel like.
Yeah, finally.
Finally. Well, I'm only 47, so...
But it's weird where you choose to start, because, like, you know, after New York... Like, I hit the wall in New York.
Yeah.
And eventually I was like, fuck it. And I went to San Francisco, and they just love people who don't fit in.
Oh, okay.
You fucked up. We need to go back in time.
Mm.
You'd be on SNL now if you'd just gone to San Francisco.
Does that
hurt your feelings?
A little bit. I had an audition there that was so bad.
Let's go back to the beginning, Kyle.
Yes.
You seem like you might be adverse to that.
No, go ahead.
No. Do you go to therapy?
Not right now.
But you have?
I have, yeah.
Because of women problems, mostly?
Yeah, my father was sick and dying, and that brought me into it. And then I had, like, yeah.
Your dad, when was that?
98.
Holy fuck, it's been a long time.
Yeah, like 20 years.
How old was he?
He was like 59 when he got diagnosed.
Holy shit,
yeah.
With what?
Brain tumor, what McCain had.
Really the same thing?
Yeah, it's aggressive and bad.
That's terrible. I'm sorry.
This is a comedy podcast, right?
No.
Oh, okay.
Not necessarily. Have you listened?
Never. No, I have actually. I don't listen to podcasts. Joe Rogan. I don't know why.
Well, there goes your week. Between me and Joe Rogan, that's what, 90 hours?
Yeah.
You know, he does, like, what does he do, 6 hours?
Yeah, we did a little. I did at one point say, like, is it over soon? But I love that. I mean,
it's like the old days, like doing a 3-hour radio show.
Yeah.
I mean, you kind of hang out, someone else comes by, and you just hang out, and they talk to him. And
low pressure.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm starting a podcast, and I'm thinking of doing like 40 minutes, because...
What happened to the Professor Blastoff?
Oh, that ended maybe like 5 years ago.
Really? It's been that long?
Were you a listener?
Yeah. Yeah, I listened to most of the one I was on.
Oh, that's right. I forgot you were on it.
We forget? And you barely even did the fucking show.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think Tig was gone. It was me and you and Huntsberger, and I don't remember who else.
Yeah. That was it. Yeah.
Just the three of us?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Tig was there. Was she?
She must have been.
Oh, maybe she was. Yeah.
Yeah, she was.
You never did it without her?
No.
I just remember we were talking about farting in relationships. You know, it was a deep podcast.
Oh, I remember that, because I had a situation where...
Yeah.
You know Mike Burton? Comedian?
No.
He used to fart on me and my friend Just. We lived in the same building. We'd take a nap. That's how hard we were working. He would like fart on us.
It was the same kind of guy that would write on your face if you were drunk.
Exactly. Uh-huh. So we got like into this Vietnam kind of sleep where, you know. So I was dating this girl, and maybe a month in, and she farted like 1 a.m. And I screamed. I threw the covers up. I was like, ah! And then I realized where I was and jumped back down into like a fetal position. And she must have knew she farted, because she didn't say, you know, why'd you scream?
Yeah. She farted in her sleep.
Yeah. And which, look.
What?
It's natural. It's like,
it is.
Fine.
It's just something you got to suck up. You know what I mean?
Well, there's a point in every relationship where you just got to deal with that, I feel
like. But it's rare to find a woman that just like blows them, you know, like dudes do. Like here we are.
Yeah.
And then just on the couch, just farting at each other. Have you had that kind of love?
No.
Yeah. I mean, you know they do it, and they smell, and, you know, they have their things, but they always carry a little shame, I think. And I'm generalizing, but I think most men, after a certain point, it's like it's coming out, and it's going to be in the car. It's going to be during a walk.
Do you have a talk, or you just let it? You just surprise like during a walk.
After a certain point, no, just go.
Yeah,
you got to get to that point where you just go.
Are you dating now? This is my podcast.
Yeah,
I've
been with this woman Sarah for like 4 years.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
How far in was it? Like we fart? Now?
I do. I mean, she's not on
board. She still keeps it.
I know she does it somewhere, you know, but we, you know.
You've never heard her fart in 4 years?
No.
Wow.
No.
She's good.
Yeah, I feel bad. I mean, I'm not saying, God damn it, don't you ever.
No, you're like, not forcing her to.
No.
I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
She's just making an effort.
Yeah. This is like our morning radio style warm up for a real conversation.
Yeah. This is, you edit these down, right?
I'm just trying to get you comfortable. I know used to doing a lot of radio and Corolla show, and you're doing voices and stuff. I just want to do whatever needs.
I need time to get into a warm up. So if we could just take that, I'd appreciate voices? It. Sure. Throw out any names, I'll do the voice.
Well, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Connecticut.
Which part?
Weston. It's near Westport.
So that's fancy.
It was, but we were one of the poor kids compared to the other kids.
Really?
I didn't know that we were pretty wealthy till I got out of town. Like, my friends had mansions, and this one guy had a pool with an island in the middle.
Oh, wow.
That Olivia de Havilland got married on. And we had none of that. We had a small plane. There was like one engine.
You had a small plane?
Yeah, it was like a tiny one, though.
But you had a plane.
Yeah, but we had no pool.
But your dad had a plane?
Yeah, but we had the house was like only 4 bedrooms.
Uh-huh. Wow, sounds really rough. Sad. No pool?
No pool.
But did you park the plane in the back?
Was
the plane up on bricks? Like, was it up on a lift on a jack?
Next to the boat.
Like, did they never get used in pieces?
I would never
go. Did you have a boat?
No.
No boat?
No.
Who flew?
My father flew.
How many kids in the family?
3 of us. I'm the youngest.
How are the other ones doing?
Brother's a cop.
Really?
Middle brother.
In Connecticut?
Yes. And he's so stressed out. I just have to say.
I don't know, man. It never ends for cops.
I mean, think about that job. And I know, you know, there's a lot of...
The thing about the job of cop is that you know that what you do, is never going to be resolved. There's always going to be crime.
Yeah.
So there's no point in your life at your job where you're like, yeah, I think we got a handle on this.
I did it.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, you go to where people are being assholes. That's your job. You know, 25 years, they've been like, hey, you know, go here.
What city?
Heart near Hartford. It's called Windsor.
Oh, okay. Oh, I know Windsor.
Yeah.
I was in Hartford. So, like, he's got domestic abuse calls.
Yeah, there's some gang stuff, too.
So it's high crime there? So he's out in there putting his hand on his gun as he approaches cars?
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah. That's dangerous. I mean,
it's the most dangerous, really.
My friend, you know, we were shooting this thing, and this is in LA, but he was dressed as a cop.
Yeah.
A fake gun. Yeah. Cops pulled us over, and they were like, is that a real gun? And he goes, no, this is a toy. And he touched it, and there was a gun in his face. like you, cop stopped you. Just
wake up.
Your hands in the air. Yeah. There's a lawsuit, sue them later, but just don't. Put your hands in your pockets.
It happened pretty quick, huh?
It was unbelievable. And he was a cop, this guy, Justin McKinney. He's a comedian now.
I know Justin,
How's
he doing?
He's doing great. He's in New Hampshire.
I saw him.
Yeah, he sells theaters in New Hampshire. He's got a good following.
Where the fuck did I see him? Like, I think he stopped by. I was surprised. And yeah, I think it must have been in New Hampshire. Because I remember him from New York, too.
Yeah.
There was another cop. DiResta was a cop.
Yes.
Joe DiResta.
He was in the car too.
Really?
It's funny you mention it. Yeah, we were doing like a cop show or something.
Two cops in the car.
Yeah,
and no one thought to not go for the fake gun.
No, John DiResta put his hands on the ceiling immediately.
Right when the guy walked up.
Justin,
because he was dressed as a cop as well.
Yes, yeah, it was scary. But this is like, it's when a cop pulls you over. Just know they're so stressed out. They just go to this domestic thing. The guy's throwing his, you know, feces on the floor, and then you go there, and then you go somewhere else where they're calling you.
Just
this
the,
and that.
The knowledge that cops, you know, after a certain point, you would think you would have seen everything, but you haven't, because people are a quote that I've been using a lot from Michael Clayton, like, people are fucking incomprehensible. So you you think that there's some sort of kind of like a context for human behavior until you you find the guy throwing shit on himself, you know, with something in his ass, and he's about to set his dick on fire.
Right.
And you're like, hey, sir, please, can you put the torch down?
Yeah. It's like, I was on the phone with my brother, and he was like, I gotta go, a guy's drinking cleaner fluid on his porch. I was like, okay.
On purpose.
And then you go to the precinct, and they're all kind of being jerks to each other because they're all trying to let out this steam.
Sure, you got
to
bust balls, right, just to get some relief.
They got to have therapy or meditation 20 minutes a day. It should be mandatory in precincts, I think, because they're dealing with so much stress.
Are you saying they do it? They do
No,
meditate?
They should. It should be.
Well, I think that there's been lots of attempts to integrate, you know, some sort of, you know, mindful kind of like relief.
Yeah.
But like, you know, after a certain point, it's like, oh, fuck that.
And on top of that, you go home and the news is like, you're an asshole racist, basically. It's like the news about cops. So it's really a tough job.
So, but he's all right?
He's doing all right. I think he's got two more years till retirement.
Oh.
He's got like a countdown.
Is he a detective or?
No, like patrol.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so he wanted to do that.
Patrol.
Yeah.
Stay active.
Now he regrets it, but in the beginning you're like.
Maybe if he'd gone to San Francisco.
Yeah, I would have been the guitar. He would have been chilled out. Man.
What's the other brother do?
That's a sister.
Oh, when did that happen?
Used to be a brother. Just kidding.
Yeah.
All right. She's a teacher. She had kids and everything.
That's
she's
nice.
Older. Yeah.
Older? Like, but you know her.
Yeah, but we weren't as close. Me and my brother talk every day.
Every day?
Pretty much, yeah.
When he's out in the car?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just give him a quick call.
Headed?
Yeah.
Going on a
diarrhea
call.
Diarrhea town. Be right back.
What yeah. is that?
It's just, I mean, I just feel bad for him, but.
Yeah.
He's a good guy.
Yeah.
Really good guy.
Well, that's nice that you talk to him every day.
Yeah.
So you grew up in the house with the plane.
We had the plane, the small plane.
And your mom?
Mom was a mother.
Mm-hmm. What grades does your sister teach?
She teaches like special like autism kids and stuff
like
that.
Oh, yeah. That's that's important.
That's another easy job.
Oh, my God. What they both just signed up
I
for.
I know. And then I signed up for vacation.
Yeah, basically. Always.
That's my job.
Just being a goofball.
Yeah.
It is kind of weird. What'd your dad do?
He was a lawyer.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like a...
He did plane crashes, actually. That was his specialty. When he first started, he wasn't making that much money. In the very end of his life, he started to make money.
Mm-hmm.
And he did like the Lockerbie crash. He was part
really?
He was part on he was on the council and then he was like lead counsel.
The Lockerbie one, that was a bomb, right?
Yeah.
So he was representing people who were on the flight from
No. He was on the bad guy side, the insurance side on that one.
Oh, really?
He was part of the team, but he didn't like it and he switched over to doing the other side, the plaintiffs. And he was lead counsel on the Croatia crash. I don't know if you remember that one. It was like Ron Brown, some like senators were in the plane.
Was that shot down?
No, they hit a mountain.
Oh.
And my father figured out there was like outdated maps. So they were liable, the plane company. And so what happens when they're liable is the widows get the money that the person would have earned.
Uh-huh.
So this plane was filled with like 17 multimillionaires.
Oh, it was a small kind of remember that. Plane. Yeah.
And so the first, widow got like $17 million. And then my dad got the brain tumor. So he couldn't finish the case.
That was in a settlement?
Hmm? The brain tumor?
Yeah.
It was part of the whole package. And my father got like, he had to split the money with that because you get like a third. So he got like $5 million for that one person. And there's 16 more. So he would have made like $60 million had he lived. But he luckily made,
enough to...
like $2 million to like take care of my mom and stuff. Because
she's still around?
Yeah.
That's nice. Same house?
She knocked down her like childhood home and built a house.
Oh, not the one you grew up in?
No. She's in Westport now, like down
that's
the street.
That's nice. Westport's pretty. You got
Westport's
the little town.
Nice.
You got the aging actresses and actors there.
Yeah. Paul Newman was
no
there.
No longer, yeah.
Died. Who's the other aging actress you're thinking of?
I don't know. I just like, I dated a girl from, my first girlfriend's mother was sort of an actress and involved with the theater and she ended up in Westport. I don't think she's there anymore, but like, they were around, it seemed.
Yeah.
Like the Arkins, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's her name? The Martha Stewart.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Westport Playhouse.
Yes.
I'm sure she worked there.
That must have been it.
Yeah.
I think she might have been involved with that at some point.
My mother did tickets there when she was 12.
When she was 12?
Yeah.
And was she an actress?
She wanted to be, yeah.
Oh.
So she pushed her little boy into it.
She pushed you into it?
Yes.
Oh. Did you do commercials when she drive you into New York?
Read commercials.
Did she?
She did a little bit, pushed me a little bit.
So, all right, so you're growing up, your brother was like athletic, the cop?
No, he was like smoker, tough guy.
Oh,
he's like,
okay.
What's that? Like, we both have the same voice, but he brought his down when he turned like 14. He's like, what's that? We talked the exact same. Then suddenly he came home and said, like, I talk like this now. Like, I'm a cop. I'm going to be a cop one day. Pick up diarrhea.
Yeah. What's a diarrhea riff?
I don't know why, but I just imagine he had to go on a call like that and it stuck in my head.
That there's a diarrhea
Someone's
problem?
Throwing diarrhea.
Someone's throwing
their feces.
Uh-huh.
That's like... kind of in us. I mean, it's a monkey thing, and sure, we're 98% monkey.
Yeah. I never think to really touch
throw
mine.
Your, no?
No. Like, if I wipe and get some on my finger, I'm sort of like, well, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm not doing this right.
And you think it's interesting?
Well, yeah, well, it's sort of like, I'm, you know, you get fascinated, like, the body's kind of amazing. It just breaks everything down into this mess, and, you know, and we move on.
Yeah.
The body's doing a lot of work without us even doing anything.
It is amazing how much is going on.
I never think to throw it, no. And I don't, you know, I don't think to pee on things.
Okay, well, maybe you're more evolved. Did you do 23andMe? Did you have?
I did, and there was no, like, on the checklist of things I wanted to know about myself.
Yeah,
the medical checklist. One of them was throwing feces, and I checked that.
No one in my family. No Cro-Magnon.
No. Man. Well, I'm sure there was, but we're not going back that far.
Do you like being like have? Because you have a Jewish thing. Like, you're Jewish, and you have this thing.
Uh-huh.
I'm very like, I don't have a thing.
That's clear.
Yeah.
You're a guy in search of a thing. That's why you do all the voices.
Yeah, I don't exist. I do other people.
Right. Well, I mean, you do exist. I mean, I get a sense of who you are.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But
in terms of genetically, like, I'm a mutt.
What was the breakdown?
It's all over. It's Irish, Italian.
Really? Your classic sort of first wave immigrant.
Yeah.
It's like all the cultures that came here in the first wave of immigration in the 1800s or whatever.
They all had sex. A lot of Irish Italians mated.
What's the other one? Is it mostly Irish?
There's just a lot of European, different Norwegian and all over the place.
Really? Norwegian too?
Yeah.
Man.
Bunch.
Yeah. You run the gamut.
A lot of mating.
Well, when did your people come here?
Well, my grandparents, great-grandparents came over on both sides.
From?
Italy and Ireland.
Okay.
Ireland.
Yeah. Have you been?
No, I want to go.
Yeah, I think you can probably live there if you want to. Can't you? How much Irish do you have in you? Dunnigan, that's Irish, right?
Yay.
Yeah, I think you could probably just live there if you wanted.
Maybe I will.
You can get citizenship.
Can I play the guitar there? Is it like?
Yeah, they love it. You just have to change the rhythm.
Mm.
So your mom is Italian?
Yeah.
Full
mostly.
On.
Mostly, yeah.
Mostly.
Yeah.
So you had Italian grandparents?
Yes.
That's nice.
Yeah, great food.
Where'd they live?
Westport.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And the other ones?
In Boston area.
The Irish, of course, Newton, in Boston. Yeah. Newton. Yeah, that's pretty good. Tough guy, brother, sister, who you don't really know that well.
Mm-hmm. Don't want to talk to her.
Yeah.
Well, I love her, but yeah, we don't speak.
What's the age difference between you and her?
6 years.
That's not that bad. And your brother?
A year and a half.
Oh, right. So you guys are right there.
And I was supposed to be an abortion. Like they told my mother they should abort me because she almost died having him.
Oh, really? So they said, you got to get rid of this one?
You got to take this one out.
Yeah.
Luckily, she gambled.
Yeah. Is it, though?
I don't know. Maybe it's not. I didn't ask to be here.
It's been hard, right?
It's not.
I mean, you're at
life
this point,
is hard.
You're 46, and you just want to do your voices and have people
That's
recognize
all.
You for it. And,
yeah.
And you know, I don't know.
Life's hard. I think this is we're living a very soft time. This new generation is we're doing them a disservice, making them think that life is easy. It's really hard.
I don't know. I think they're adapting in a different way. I think that every generation, like I think that there's a lot of things that they have easier. That's not necessarily that great. I don't think they have any capacity for context in terms of history. I think that the internet has made everything very present and very trivial in a way.
Yeah.
That there's no reason for them to sort of take note of what delivered them here, the nature of the struggle. And you know, they're paralyzed by convenience and completely plugged into a lot of kind of temporary and short-sighted bullshit.
Yeah, I think it's really hard.
Is that just old guy talk?
No, I think you make a good point. I think it's really hard to grow up where, I mean, just the idea of like the likes and stuff when you're a teenager, having to deal with all that. And
everything's like so, like it's like everything is available all the time. And there's all these things that you know, and you grow up, you know, engaging with screens. You don't have, you know, the sort of realm of your imagination is limited to the compulsion to put everything that you think out into the world.
Yeah, and porn. I mean, when we were growing up, like I would rip out pieces in Glamour and hide them under my bed.
Oh,
and
the
there was
first
like a girl
time,
in her underwear.
Right, or your porn magazine, or like you get hold of some weird, I'm a little older, so you get hold of some weird Betamax tape, and you're like, oh my God. And now, like, it's, I'm very suspect to why there's so much porn. And, you know, like in the fucking 80s, there was a goddamn Meese Commission about pornography in this culture and the dangers of it. And there was this whole conservative right wing push to rid us of porn. And now all of a sudden it's just okay for it to be everywhere.
Yeah. And has anyone done a study about, because now is the time to do it with kids that grew up where they were like, oh, that actress is hot. Let me see her naked.
Yeah. Yeah, I've done a personal study. Porn will fuck your head up.
Oh, you did your own research?
Yeah, no, I definitely, it's conclusive.
Yeah.
I saw it when I was very young, 14, you know, and it was even harder, well, much harder to find, but I got hold of some.
But at least you had to work for it.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. But outside of that, so young Kyle,
mm-hmm.
What's he doing?
What was I doing as a child?
What were you doing in high school? Were you a song and dance man?
You know, embarrassingly, kind of was.
I
mean, I took tap and jazz with my mother when I was 13, and I didn't want to.
Wow.
I was a follower. Like, I sort of did what my mother told me to do.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, your parents are, that's how you survive. You please them. Uh-huh. And I just got this message to sort of listen.
Have you considered maybe you're gay or no?
I consider it all the time. The only thing holding me back is that I find the female body more attractive. But that's other than that, that's it.
It seemed like you're gonna, yeah.
I think my dad, because my dad found my porn under my bed, I think he was relieved. Not that he's against gay people, but I think he was worried maybe this would be tough for this kid.
Right. You know, my tap dancing son?
Yes.
my jazz son.
Jazz hand son. So I think...
So he's like, kid's all right. So he found it and he tucked it back
under? He gave me like
under.
A wink. Like
and he let you keep it?
Yeah. That was cool. Just pictures of girls in their underwear. Right,
so you're going to tap and jazz with your mom? What age is that?
Humiliated. Like 13.
Oh.
Like too old.
And she convinced you that it'd be a...
Didn't have to convince. I literally did not think for myself till recently. I would even say I'm still kind of working on it. I didn't really think to do like I would like music. But I would never think to buy it.
Right.
And my mother sort of amazing mother, but like this one area of sort of guiding me where to go. I think I didn't. I got the message that. My voice didn't really matter. They did a study in the 70s, which they'd never do now, but they would have a mother rattle in front of the baby.
Yeah.
And all babies do this in stages. They do the same thing.
Is this part of your research to figure out what your problem is?
Well, accidentally, yeah. Like when I heard this, I was like, oh, that's me. That happened to me.
Like what now?
So they rattle the rattle in front of the baby and the babies like and laugh.
Yeah.
They have them keep rattling.
Yeah.
They start to push it away.
Yeah.
They make the mothers keep rattling. All babies then cry.
Yeah.
They have it keep rattling and then all babies drool and numb out.
Uh-huh.
And I was like numbed out. Like I would go.
From all the, what do you call it? From the stimulus.
Just like, for example.
Your mother's needs.
Yeah. And just like her, like example, I would go, I'm going to go outside and she'd be like, do you want to get a jacket? No, I'm good. You should get a jacket. It's cold out. No, I don't want a jacket. Let me get you a jacket. No, don't give me a jacket. And then I'm walking out and there's a jacket being put on me. You know, you get the message. Your voice doesn't really...
But it's interesting.
Yeah.
I never thought of that. But I mean, on some level, that seems relatively maternal.
It is. And it's I think most mothers do this.
But when it comes to like, you're going to jazz dance. No, I don't want to do jazz.
Never even thought to say no. I thought it. I don't want to.
Oh, so you're already, the hooks were in.
I was a robot.
Oh, saying at some point you just entered a state of post-traumatic stress from your mother's needs to make you do what she wanted you to do.
Yeah, drooling, numbed out.
Right, so by 13, you're like,
what are we doing? And I want to be clear, I have a great mother. I love my mother. This is nothing malicious.
Right.
It just, and some other kid, you know, my brother said, you know, screw off.
So your brother was the one that's like, fuck you guys.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm smoking cigarettes and hanging out with these ne'er-do-wells.
Exactly.
And you're like, I'm
going to go dance.
you got to stick it to him at some point, pal.
Are you getting me now? Are you starting to understand my behavior now and the guitar playing and everything and the voices?
Almost.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
you're
I mean...
closer to it.
I'm closer to it, but like so tap and jazz at 13, then what happens in junior high and high school?
I remember a guy, not to keep harping, but he gave my tap shoes back just to get them like put on.
Yeah.
And he goes, one day I'm going to see you on Broadway. And I remember thinking, oh, gross. Like in my head, I didn't say it, but I was like, ah, I want to be dancing. And anyway.
Did you go to musicals with your mom?
I went, yeah.
In New York? Was it like, we're going to the city to see Guys and Dolls.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Yeah. And then I was in school, I majored in theater, and I just did not like it at all.
Where, in college?
Yeah, I went
But what happened in high school? Were you like...
That was actually doing the theater shows gave me a sense of myself for the first time.
So you were a theater nerd in high school?
Yeah, I was the leader of the nerds. I was the president of company, which was the theater group.
And you think that your mother was, this was her encouragement?
You know, yes and no. I'm glad that she got me into this business and everything, but yeah, I think it was had a big part of it.
So you did several shows in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Song and Dance Man. Some
dancing,
musicals?
Dancing Up a Storm.
Really?
Yeah.
You still dance or no?
No. I never was very good. There was a guy, he was ahead of Alvin Ailey, and he did the choreography, which is amazing.
High school? In Weston?
The chairman of Alvin Ailey did. So
why, because he lived in the area or
he
what?
Was friends with the director, so he just came up to do some charity work for us no rhythm kids.
Right.
And we did The Wiz, I was the scarecrow.
Uh-huh.
We did flower drum songs, we were Asians.
Uh-huh.
We did Fiorello, and I played a Jewish person. I never played a white person or...
So that's sort of an interesting key. So what was the Jewish person in what?
Morris Cohen.
In which show?
Flower Drum Song.
Uh-huh. Did you talk like that? I'm Morris Cohen.
I'm Morris Cohen. Oh, no. What do we do next?
Really? You did that?
I did that. Is that racist?
No, I don't know. Not when you're in high school, I guess. Maybe it would be now. Be insensitive. Mm-hmm.
It's very insensitive.
I mean, you know, I imagine with all those shows, everybody would just have to have flat affect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We did Asians, and those white kids they made us do the makeup. It would not be done today.
They put tape on your heads?
They didn't do tape, but they did the makeup.
Oh, really? Like King and I shit?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And then I think it was Flower Drum Song, I had a solo, and the chairman of Alvin Ailey was kind of going around the stage writing the dance for me.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, this is going to be hot, he said to me. And so I did the dance, and halfway through, the audience is just laughing. They're laughing at my dance. And then.
So not hot?
Not hot. And at the break, I go, I'm sorry, I don't know. And he's like, no, it was supposed to be funny. And it was not. He said it was going to be hot.
Yeah.
That's what he promised. I still know the dance. I still know the move. I want to do it. I wish I could. I'll do it later for you.
How are you ever going to forget something that scarred you so intensely? The first time you get just a room full of unintentional laughs when you're being serious and really...
It hurts.
Oh, man.
Because I started that dance like, this is going to be hot. As I was told. Parents laughing at a kid who's trying to be a hot dancer.
How old? What year was that?
That was 17. That was senior year.
Wow.
Wow is right. Wow.
But yeah. You had some experience with being funny on purpose.
You know, I did get voted class clown, that kind of thing. But when I was in eighth grade.
I mean, when you're doing shows and, you know, you do comedies, when you're doing Morris, what's his name? Cohen?
Cohen, yeah.
I mean, you must have got, was that supposed
to be
funny?
I got some laughs on that.
Is it a comedy or no?
Yeah, that was a comedic part, yeah.
Right.
And then we had like a talent show. My friends were like, you should do stand-up. Again, my idea.
In high school?
High school, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And I just did what people told me to do.
Sure.
It's a weird thing.
So that's what you are?
A follower, yes.
Yeah.
Follower. I've broken it, though, now that I'm aware of it. I have the tendency, but I can point to it and go,
like, instinctually, when someone goes, come on, let's do, you're like, wait a minute, let me think it through.
Yeah, do I want this?
Kyle doesn't want to do that.
Yeah.
But he will.
I speak in the third person. Kyle doesn't like to dance.
But if you keep telling me I should, I will.
Yeah.
But so you're doing characters in high school.
I would do impressions and stuff like Michael Jackson. This girl I really liked my Michael Jackson impression in like seventh grade.
Oh, so you were like, you were always, you had it turned on all the time. That was your method of communicating, of getting attention. And
yes.
Because you could, like, if you're not unlike many of us, like, you've got the full spectrum of high school nightmare cliques around.
Yeah.
And you could entertain all of them.
I was tiny.
Yeah.
I felt invisible, and this was a way of...
I'm glad you grew out of that.
I'm like 140. soaking wet. But I graduated high school at 110, a heavy 110.
Yeah.
So it was a bean pole.
But everyone knew you because you were funny.
It was a pretty small school. It was 110 people or something. So people knew me. Yeah.
So there was no monsters?
No, it wasn't too bad. But I did
no football team?
There was, but they were terrible.
With 110 students? Or is that just your class?
Class.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, okay, so you're
dancing
song
away.
And dance, man. And what happened with the stand-up experience in high school?
It was bad. I wrote 20 minutes that day, and we know that you don't
was
do
it
that.
At a talent show situation?
It was a talent show, yes. So I went out, and I did, like, some stuff, and it was going well, and then the host of the show came out, and she said, Mrs. Ola is about to suspend you. You can't. This is in the middle of stop the show dead, person you're, whispering in my ear.
Because you're in the middle of your act and you're killing?
Yeah, it was going well and I was doing stuff. And
what were you doing?
I remember doing impressions of some teachers and stuff like that. You know, the easy stuff.
Yeah, well, no, it's not easy, but like in that context, it was looked at as a attack on authority.
I exactly.
Because you got to the principal and then someone said, stop him.
Well, they were upset about my language, which wasn't even that. I think I said like penis or something like that.
That was it?
And she left and I told the audience, I'm like, I'm not allowed to say penis anymore. Uh-huh. So I told them
big laugh.
What she said, trying to get a laugh.
Yeah, did you?
So then I started to, say just other words for penis and then they dragged me off stage.
They dragged you off?
They dragged me off.
Who?
There was two hosts of the talent show.
How they like physically?
Yeah, did you I kind of let them drag me. You know what I mean?
They were just taking part of the act.
Yeah,
here I go,
making a bit.
Yeah.
Then I got suspended for like 2 days.
Really, you're like the Lenny Bruce of your small high school.
Yeah, you know how edgy I am.
Yeah, man.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Breaking the law.
So your mom, when
my mom was there, luckily, because she saw that I wasn't that bad.
So when you got suspended, she said, "Let's go get some ice cream and maybe dance a little."
Yeah, she. Yeah, we danced. And then there was a guy there, James Naughton. You know, that was an actor.
Sure, I remember that guy. He's one of those Westport guys, right?
Yes, he stuck up for me, which I really appreciate at that point.
He wasn't the one in American Werewolf in London.
That was his brother, David Naughton.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He was in A Planet of the Apes, the TV show. He played a non-ape.
James was?
Yes. Yeah, he would direct, he would like coach us acting. We had an amazing, for a high school like theater department, we had an amazing help. It was great. But then I got to college, and I did not like my acting experience in college. So, I didn't fit in.
So you graduated, you're suspended, you put that on your resume, got suspended for a stand-up act.
I was upset. I didn't do stand-up for like 5 years after that because of...
But you graduate and you what? Did you apply at other places? Yale?
No. I don't read well.
You mean you have dyslexic? Or
I have something, I think. I never got tested, but like...
Undiagnosed? You don't have the will to read?
I don't have... I went to like a... Try to get untimed.
What does that mean?
SAT test. You can get them like untimed. Because I did well for what I read, but I couldn't finish in time.
I tested out of my language requirement in college.
Oh, really?
I just couldn't wrap my brain around it, dude. I could not. I could not.
What was it?
I couldn't do symbolic logic. I couldn't do mathematics after a certain point. Language, like I chose French and like I was just sort of like, you could take a test that would show that you're like mentally incapable.
Yeah.
To get out of the requirement, and I did that. I did. You can't... I tried to charm my teacher, but he wouldn't have it.
You just did terrible in French?
I just couldn't do it. I didn't understand, like, the grammar, the tenses. It was like, you know, it was a lot of work.
Well, that's school. You gotta learn it.
Yeah, I know. If I couldn't, like, sort of song and dance my way through a class, liberal arts education, through bullshit, like I couldn't write a paper. It was just like, usually if it was like a 10 page paper, it would be like 9 pages of pretty good opening paragraphs that never really zeroed in on a point.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it.
I didn't do well in that either.
No?
You don't need that. There's so much you don't need. And why do they not teach kids how to deal with their emotions? They don't take an hour to go, hey, here's what's going to come up. And here's some techniques to deal with it or whatever. They just go, here's Charlemagne, here's what year he was emperor or whatever. I just don't, we got to be going that way, right?
Right. What? Teaching kids about their emotions?
Yeah, and how to deal with life. Like being real overwhelmed. Life
overwhelmed.
Lessons.
No, I haven't. No. Yeah. You got to get those on the street.
Why? Why can't you get them in school?
I think that's
bit?
True. I think you're right. I don't. No one prepared me for anything. Maybe it's your parents' job. I don't fucking know. All I know.
I'm not yelling at you, by the way.
No, I know. But all I know is that, you know, I got out of college and I moved to LA and I didn't even know how to get an apartment. I didn't know how to get a
right.
bed.
Right. Like, mortgage.
Well, that just happened. You know, that was like I was in my 40s.
I know. Why don't they teach seniors about mortgages or when you're? I looked at a place in Venice.
How about how just to buy a bed that's not like a futon on the floor, or how not to live out of boxes?
That should be a class. How to buy a bed. 10:30 a.m.
Yeah,
I looked at a place. It was between Santa Monica and Venice. Okay, yeah. A half a block from the beach. It
right.
was $286,000 for two level, two bedroom uh-huh. in 2001. Uh-huh. I thought I had to pay the whole thing.
Me too. I used to do a bit about that.
Why didn't they tell us?
Like when people told me they bought houses, I go, how much? They'd go like $1.5 million and be like, where'd you get it? Like I thought it was like a drug deal. You showed up with a duffel bag
yeah.
of hundreds.
Yeah.
No, and I had no idea.
That place is worth $2 million now. If I just knew about a mortgage, I'd be like, okay, I'll take that.
Yeah. Yeah. at that point, it was probably zero down and I just, great.
Unbelievable.
No.
Who?
Oh man,
it's just archaic what they teach.
So many things it sounds like in your life. If you'd gone to San Francisco with the guitar, and if
I
someone
do
told
sound like
you
a San Francisco guy,
how you know to do a mortgage, it would have been a different world for you.
Yeah, and my dancing, everything I should have gone
dancing.
I blew it.
You blew it.
Dang. I didn't know any better.
Well, you can still dance, I bet.
I can actually. I can move well, yeah. And I'm not afraid to say that.
Yeah,
like I just can. I have a natural gift.
Yeah. So what was the? Why did you have a problem with the undergraduate degree you got in theater arts?
Okay, here's a class.
Yeah.
Movement for the Actor, it's called.
Yeah.
They'd put on a tape for 45 minutes of sounds, and you have to move around how you feel. So it's like, beep, boing, 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 rock, rock, rock. And people are just moving around the room.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
no guidance?
No, you move around to the, you feel what you, what, like that kind of crap. And then in this other class, we would read a book. Like this one guy read Death of a Salesman.
Uh-huh.
No, it was the Stella
yeah.
Streetcar oh,
yeah.
Named Desire.
Yeah, yeah, right.
So then you have to come in with your interpretation. So he wrote on a mirror in lipstick, whore, and then he pulled on his pants and humped the mirror and then turned around and told us to go F ourselves and ran out of the room. And he got an A. That was his interpretation of the... This was
it's
where
raw.
I was.
It's raw. Yeah, I mean, he took a big risk there.
They didn't teach me how to get a resume or how to get a picture, how to get an agent. None of that.
Uh-huh.
I just left like... And if I... You know, I was still in that state of like being a follower, so I just stayed there instead of going, this is... I want out of here.
But you didn't learn anything?
No.
Come on.
I didn't learn anything. I learned
did
to...
Did you do plays?
Yeah. This one...
Do scene study?
Like, not even well. This one guy was like, if you crack your voice, you sound more emotional. So we would go around the room saying farewell. He'd
yeah.
point to you and you'd go, farewell. And you'd go,
great.
I wanted you to do it.
Oh, okay. I'll do
farewell.
It. Farewell.
See? That was a class. Now, why I didn't leave 4 years, I did that.
And then what happens?
And then I just left.
Yeah. And then where did you go? Were you just wandering around?
I went to New York. I was like, where's Marc Maron?
You went to New York. So you just moved after college with no plan. I'm going to be an actor. Was that it?
Yeah.
So get
a great plan.
Gary, where are my tap shoes?
Yeah, nobody, you got to, yeah, there's no tap work
no.
in New York.
There's a little.
It doesn't pay well.
Savion Glover and the other guy do it, though.
Yeah. You can't tap your way to like
yeah, still, people still dance, though. But you know, that I started to realize, like, you know, people still want to be dancers, but you can, like, you know, there's like, Broadway shows, there's Vegas shows, they got dancers on boats. You know, I guess, I mean, it doesn't seem like it seems like a very small kind of talent pool, but, you know, people
no
still
one's
want...
doing anything new either. You've seen all the moves. You can
sure.
see them on video.
Yeah, yeah.
Someone's doing something new.
New with dance.
This guy can spin 30 times.
Yeah, but that's just flashy, you know. That's ballet stuff. I mean, there's still like honor the form kind of stuff, you know. But not, you know, we're not talking about Rockettes stuff. We're talking about Alvin Ailey. They're probably doing something good.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, they're.
But who's
good.
Going? Who's going?
I don't want to watch dance.
Yeah, I mean, I can go, but I'm not seeking it out. I'm not checking, you know, schedule.
You're not checking
calendars.
The dance.
No.
Shows. In
I
town?
Should. I feel like I should though.
Maybe we should go to a dance together and just see how it is.
But you might end up crying and stuff.
Is that a problem?
No, I'll probably cry too. I'm more likely to cry at a musical just because there's so many people exuding joy.
That's what you're afraid of. You're afraid of crying?
I cry all the time, but I never, you know, when I should.
When's the last time you cried?
I got choked up the other day. What the hell was going on? I was watching a movie. It was Amy Schumer's movie, of all things.
Which one?
I get choked up pretty easy. I watched the Pretty One.
Oh, okay.
What was it called? Am I Pretty? I Feel Pretty.
I Feel Pretty, yeah.
I thought she did a great job.
She's a great actress.
I mean, I've seen her stuff, and yeah, I know that movie got a bad rap and whatever, but in terms of her comedic acting performance.
Great.
And they played it so straight. It was kind of impressive. It was, it was a pretty, you know, big conceit, real fairy tale shit. But they played outside of that. They played it pretty straight.
Yeah.
And I thought it was very effective and funny.
Yeah, I thought it was good too. But
and you worked with her for a long time.
Yeah, long time. Long time.
Well, let's get there because we're going to be here all day if we don't.
You know. And look.
You tired already?
You know how busy I am.
I know. What do you got to do?
I got to go pick up some wood.
Really?
I bought some reclaimed wood.
You're going to do some work?
We're going to do an accent wall in my house.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
You think I'm just a song and dance man? I do like woodwork and stuff.
You're going to do woodwork?
Yeah. I'd like to build stuff.
Does Huntsberger come help you?
No.
He's a leather guy.
He's a leather guy.
He does leather work.
Yeah, yeah.
He made me some leather things.
Did he really? I didn't even know that. I had a podcast with him for 3 years.
You didn't know that he does some... Guy. Yeah, he made me some leather coasters because he saw I had some that someone else had made me, so he made me some. I'll show you on the inside. I'm
trying to top the
it was clearly, you know, he knew he could personalize or, you know, he did a nice job with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, like the stuff you get at Tandy, you know, where you hit the hammer with the leather.
Oh, okay.
He's a cowboy. You knew that.
That's right. He is such a cowboy.
But he's a real cowboy.
Yeah. Like he's moving out of here. So my guess, he's going to Montana.
Yeah, get back to the horses.
Yeah, that's where he belongs.
So, all right. So you got the wood. Okay, so we'll get you out of here so you can get the wood. But so you go to New York, and when do you start doing the comedy?
I started doing sketch and improv.
Where?
I joined different groups. This one group I had to pay money to be in it.
Yeah.
Who does that?
I don't know. People pay money to get stage time. They bring bring friends. There's a lot of different, you know, you got to do what you
got
to do.
And I got this other thing, this other group. I just realized there was no money in sketch and improv.
Right.
And so I was like, let me go back to try stand up again.
Yeah.
And I went to the comic strip because they were the ones who would let you audition.
Oh, that's right.
The other clubs,
right.
It wasn't really your audition process right. of getting in.
So you get passed?
I got passed and I started doing some late night stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I started to... get better spots before I was ready. Very thankful.
I remember it was mostly guitar, right?
No, I remember. In the beginning I started with the guitar, but I got rid of it pretty quick. I felt like this is shameful. This is not what people do.
Clearly, I remembered it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I in my mind somewhere.
I'm a dancing
there, you're
guitar
like,
player,
just a guitar guy. It's a guitar act.
Yeah.
Right, the guitar act.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember when I first started seeing you around, like, you know, like even as late as when you were dating Sarah Silverman, I'm like the guitar guy.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it was like when you're like a comic that's like, you know, so geared towards like the real shit.
Yeah.
You know, the guitar guy never goes away. The guitar guy.
I mean, I'm okay with it because I feel like if you're making people laugh, like whatever you're doing is okay. I mean, I feel like I shouldn't have backed away from that and took the peer pressure.
Is that what you think
Looking
happened?
Back, I definitely, you know, the vibe in New York was you do not go up with a guitar on stage.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I just stopped doing it and tried to be like how other people were being and talk about. But my life, as you've heard, is not a great.
Well, we didn't even talk about the plane. I mean, how often did you go up in the little plane?
Not that much. Maybe like once a year.
Yeah.
Did
your dad fly it a lot?
Yeah, he flew it a lot.
Yeah, just to go to like New York or around.
Yeah, he would go to his, you know,
oh, yeah?
Law stuff.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it was
didn't
cool.
Didn't know how to fly, but you didn't, never interested
in it. No, I wouldn't even get in a plane like that now.
Yeah.
One
all right,
engine.
So you give up the guitar against your wishes. You buckled because you just, you know.
Peer pressure follower. Yeah. You know, I'm following the trends.
I don't know if that's following. It's just sort of like you want to be a comic, so like you comics you respect are like, you know, maybe, you know, lose the guitar or something.
Yeah,
like that.
And I was told to lose it too by managers and stuff.
Really?
Like that. Yeah.
Who were your guys when you were coming up? Who'd you like to watch and stuff?
I mean, you
really?
Dave Attell.
Oh yeah.
I did like, you know, Dana Carvey and stuff, but it just wasn't happening. That kind of comedy wasn't happening in New York.
So how'd you evolve? What were you doing? Because I kind of lost touch or interest. I can't remember.
I'm sure it was interest.
You're very funny now. I like watching you when you go on now.
Oh, thanks. I did Conan O'Brien. I got that, and then that got me out to L.A.
Oh, okay.
And
what, 2000 something?
I think it was 2000. And I just did some acting stuff. I got some sketch shows. I did Cedric the Entertainer Presents. I joined mid-season. I thought I'd made it like a bunch of times. I thought, here comes the rocket ship.
Well, yeah, right. But were you doing mostly impressions or just being yourself?
No, I never was doing impressions on stage. Or characters. I just did it for the auditions. And those were the auditions I was getting. Like,
right.
I never got a sitcom or anything where I had to read a script.
As yourself.
Never.
Right.
I only got shows that were like your character or your
You got the Cedric thing and you're like...
And I did like... Jamie Foxx had a sketch pilot that I did. That was like... To get a part, it was like six auditions and I get there and there's... no writers. Two of his friends who just got out of jail were the writers.
Yeah.
And our first table read was, there was no ending to sketches.
Yeah.
And Jamie Foxx was coming once a week, and the first table read, he threw the script. He goes, fuck the script. You do you.
Uh-huh.
And then he left, and the executive was like, no, you have to do the script. We weren't allowed to write for ourselves because of WGA rules or something like that. Anyway, Eric Andre was on the show too. When it was over, we were like, what was that?
What was that called?
Yeah, that was called, it was the Afion Crockett show at one point, Into Flow, where they changed it to. It had a lot of iterations.
And it didn't go anywhere.
No, I think it was on like one episode.
Andre was on too?
Yeah.
That must have been something.
The two of you just bonded, what is happening? Yeah, and then we go to the after party.
Yeah.
It's a nice restaurant, and we walk in late because we were had sweat and mustaches from the actual taping. And Jamie Foxx is standing up, long table, and he's going down the table. What's your favorite animal?
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's just like, a goat. I mean, a raccoon.
Yeah.
He's all scared. And then he goes, what's your second favorite animal? Goes all around. And then he goes, the first animal is who you think you are. The second animal is who you actually are. I told Tom Cruise that, and he said it blew his mind. So,
and that was it?
Yeah.
And then thank you for helping out. We're not going to be continuing.
Yeah. When we finished the pilot, he like made a speech, and it was like Fox executives were there,
yeah,
paying for these audiences to stay there,
yeah.
And he's making a speech about "I told you so," and it was not good.
But you did. But Reno kind of broke you a little, right? Reno 911.
Yeah, although I look nothing like or sound anything like that character. No one ever.
But you do a lot of characters now that, like, especially now with this Instagram stuff, where you're just like,
yeah.
Even though I don't even know what application you're using to make all that happen, but you know,
face swap.
Yeah. Oh, it's just that basic. Yeah.
It's called face swap, and they just put someone's face on your face.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you can't really see you, but you can see you on some of the goofier ones where you're doing characters.
Yeah, yeah.
Where yeah they're very Dana Carvey inspired ish. Some of the, like the news guy.
Yeah, yeah.
What's that guy's
name?
Oh
yeah, Craig.
Yeah.
What's going on, you guys?
Yeah. So you just like build those guys from the inside.
Yeah, I remember. I always did that character, that Craig character.
Yeah,
you
just didn't give him a job.
No, my mother actually would do characters with me for like hours, where I would think like we should stop doing this, even as like a child.
What now?
My mother would. We would do. She would like pull like role play.
Uh huh.
And so I would. We would play like characters and stuff.
She would do characters too.
Yeah.
How old were you?
Six.
Oh.
Yeah.
So this was before the dancing.
Yeah.
Okay. So it was more child play. I would.
Like, yeah, yeah.
If you were
yeah,
doing
yeah
that in high school, it'd be.
No, we didn't do that. No, that was pre-pubescence.
But like, the writing stuff. So you're doing stand up. You're doing all the shows we all do. You're getting attention stand up wise. You're funny.
A little bit. I mean, I never felt like completely comfortable with what I was doing on stage stand up wise. I could never watch my sets. I did well enough to do shows and. Do okay.
Yeah, but, all the like Conans and the thises and the thats, right?
Yeah, but I recently, I'm changing my act around.
You did Comedy Central Presents.
Yeah, I actually saw you there. Do you remember? We did the same day. You had
which one?
Goats.
I think I had two. Oh yeah, the sheep. What a
sheep.
Bad idea that was. It just didn't.
Well, why were they
right
telling us to put our? We don't know what our background.
Well,
should
but
be.
Most people are just sort of like I read into it. I'm thinking about the mise en scène. I think I'm like a rebel. So like I'm the one sheep that's going the other way. But basically, it was just a big picture of the asses of sheep.
Yeah.
And then there was a sheep on stage, and no one stopped me.
But we still remember it.
Well, I look at it, and I'm like, I'm doing my stand-up routine, and there's literally sheep's asses surrounding my fucking face.
You were the sheep guy to me. I'm the guitar guy to you. You're the sheep guy. I go, oh, the sheep guy?
It was a big plan, but how I thought in any world that anyone would read that properly, and that I would think that much of myself as I'm a rebel, so like I'm the sheep that turned the other way, and it just is like, why is there a sheep up there?
You overestimated your audience.
It was just dumb. No, someone should have stopped me and just said, just put, you know, Marc Maron up there. That was like that. Once people just like put their names up there, I'm like, that's reasonable. Like yeah. I did two of those. The first ones I put a sideshow banner on. I'm like, I want a freak show banner behind me because I feel, you know, like that.
Yeah, you shouldn't be in charge. I mean, you're great stand up, but you should not be in charge of set design.
No,
I remember the right before I went on, a lady goes, You have my favorite. Your set's my favorite. And I got, because I felt insecure. I felt like, oh, she loves my comedy. Yeah. I thought she meant my set, stand-up set.
Because they let you choose it. That was the big thing with those first half hours. You can choose your set design.
Well, when I found out she meant my set design, I lost all confidence there. I had just my name and like some stars. Little like Christmas lights. Very basic.
That's smart.
I liked it.
So you dated Sarah, but that's, you know, I don't really go in that direction, but you wrote for her.
Yeah.
On the first show as well?
No.
Later?
No.
The Amy, new one, the Hulu
Inside
show.
Amy Schumer was the first show I ever wrote on as a writer.
And she brought you in because she liked
you. Yeah.
Now, that was always under fire.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And, you know, how did that pan out when the accusations of theft of sketches happened? Like, didn't you get slagged for the magician one?
Yeah, I didn't because I think a lot of it's just like under the radar stuff. But like that magician sketch, that was my thing. Like I do magic hands or whatever.
Yeah.
But like I was there in the writing of it. And the part that's like in question, here's what went down in the room.
Yeah.
You know, there's nine writers.
I can't even remember what was the magician bit.
That was like someone else did it on YouTube.
Right.
These two exact bits this person did.
Yeah.
And
what was the angle?
I mean, wow, it was like a magician in bed with a woman. He's pulling like a scarf out of her vagina.
Right,
and then
right.
he like comes up, they makes the a balloon animal out of the condom.
Okay.
So you have a room of writers and the head writer was like, okay, we need like funny things a magician could do in bed during sex.
Right.
So it just,
sure.
after 45 minutes, someone comes up with a condom, blowing up into a balloon.
Yeah,
it just happens.
Yeah.
And like it just, those ideas.
No, I agree. I know. Like I've been in writers' rooms before, and you got to sit there and go like, is this like?
Yeah, they were very into like Googling. This guy's. I mean, he had like 200 views. It was while we've been talking, 1,000 comedy videos have been uploaded to YouTube.
Yeah,
it's just like almost
impossible. It's true. Like especially with stuff that isn't insanely personal.
Yeah,
that the possibility of somebody coming to the same bit is high.
Yeah, especially now.
Yeah, that's why I made the shift. Like, you know, even there are some bits, if I talk about anything that's, you know, pop culture or whatever, I'm like, nah, someone's got to be.
Yeah, yeah. Know. Yeah. It's so not worth it. No one wants to, you know, be called a thief.
The worst.
It ruins your whole career. It's like, they were very good. You know, there was someone who was like, is that sounds familiar? And they would Google it. It's just impossible to get everything.
But you wrote for most of that, right? And you performed.
Yeah, I wrote for all 4 years. Yeah.
Did you used to open for her too?
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. How's she doing?
Well, that's a way to be a comedian, what she does.
Opening.
Arenas.
Yeah.
You fly a private jet and then escort through red lights from
the
airport. Just right to the thing.
Still? She's still drawn like that?
I don't know.
So now, your primary focus outside, I see you do stand up a lot and it's very funny over at the Comedy Store, but it's these Instagram videos where you put yourself in character with the face melding app.
Yeah.
What is it called?
It's called FaceSwap.
Right. FaceSwap.
If you could refer to me as the king of Instagram, because I feel like when you just say something, it becomes true, like a Trump thing. So
sure.
Because Kyle Donahan, king of Instagram.
So, okay, let's go back.
Let's go
but
back.
Don't, let me just give a note to my producer. Right. Don't cut what we said before. So, Kyle, you're kind of the king of Instagram now.
Oh, thank you. thank you. King of Instagram. Kyle Dunnigan won. Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. Good for you.
I love having a one at the end of my name.
That's at Kyle Dunnigan one.
Yeah. My nephew told me it's not cool to have a number in your name.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, you just didn't get there quick enough.
No, this guy's got my Gmail. He's got everything.
Oh, God. Have you talked to him? Do you have a relationship?
We email because he sends me emails like, this looks important. But there's a bunch of he's not emailing me. Like, he's gone quiet for a year, and I'm sure I'm missing.
Well, he's I think he's doing, like, he's dancing now, I think I heard.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he's dancing,
great.
And he does a guitar thing at the end.
Oh, my God. I got to see that act.
Kyle Dunnigan 2. You're Kyle Dunnigan 1.
Yeah.
But he's the real Kyle Dunnigan.
I mean, according to Gmail, he is.
But the point is that you've done something creative with available apps. You've done what people assumed that everyone was going to do. You've made your own little, you know, thing with the available technology without a tremendous cost to yourself. But I haven't seen it done before. Mm. But then again, I'm not. But you're the king.
Right.
But like, I don't spend a lot of time on Instagram. But you'll do a lot of Trump in conversation with somebody else, whether it's I watched the CK one. I saw a Pence one. But I think that was Bill Maher and Pence.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's a lot of Trump talk. There's a lot of Kardashian business. Some
those
Kanye
get the
business.
Most view of the Caitlyn Jenner stuff.
The you as Caitlyn and all the other ones. You play all the people.
Oh, yes.
And you do a pretty good Trump.
And they actually made a video. Chloe was doing my bit in one of her Instagram stories.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I got it. On
purpose? Did she give you credit?
No. But she did it. Like, uh-huh. She kept doing, we're mad at you, which is the thing I do.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's funny.
Cool.
She stole something from your impression.
Yeah, she claimed it. You know, which is the good, you know.
Claimed it.
Good thing.
But you're
to
okay
do.
With it.
Oh, I love that.
Would have been better if she gave you credit.
It would have been way better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now where do you see this going?
To the top. Right there. I look at it like, and I'm excited about this cuz this is like my TV show. I have total control. You know, I got this audience now.
Yeah.
And I just love it.
How long does it take you to do those? It seemed pretty.
Some take so long
because you've got to put the little box in of you with the. How do you? What's the production?
It's gotten a lot faster. Really, I do go through like a writing process. I shoot them kind of not just with my face, without the face swap stuff, so I can just see if it works.
Yeah.
And when I first started doing this, I kind of got some flack for trying too hard. Because it's clear I'm trying really hard on
like
my Instagram.
Yeah, production values.
Yeah. And I thought, I'm going to keep doing...
It's an outlet. Fuck them.
Yeah. And I was like, oh. And now people don't give me flack anymore for that.
Well, I mean, I think it's like, it's a not, like all these apps are, you know, really designed to entertain ourselves and then just dump it out there in the world. Like, look what I did with the thing.
Yeah.
But like, you know, you've done it. You've taken this technology to this other place where you can actually cast an entire show with yourself, like a sketch show.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, using this thing. But like, how do you, like, I don't know enough about the technology to, even if you were to tell me that I would be like, oh, right. You know, I couldn't even do that. But it seems like to do the two face mash things.
Yeah.
And then, you know, have one in a box so they can actually have conversation. That seems to be a leap. Like, you can't just do that on the app, right?
No, I go to this editing app.
Yeah.
And it's pretty intuitive. And there was a learning curve when I first started doing it. I just wanted to do I was looking to have conversations. And so I thought the FaceTime.
Yeah.
It's like a natural thing to look at. So I
started
doing
FaceTime.
Oh, so
that's FaceTime what you're mocking.
Talks. Yeah. Like I'm using that device, FaceTime. Oh. So it makes sense.
You actually use FaceTime?
No, but just the FaceTime where you see picture in picture.
Yeah. Right, so that's right. That's what it looks like when you FaceTime someone.
That idea was huge for me because now I could have conversations. That's the key. Because I can have conversations now without cutting back and
forth.
But
what's the other though when you do all the Jenners and Caitlyn Jenner and all the Kardashians? That's more like Go Office or Me Office or one of those.
Where it's more of a leap. It's a big FaceTime party.
Well, no, it's like one of those ones where I used to advertise for it, but I can't remember what it was. There's a couple of different apps that do that, so you can talk to several people at a meeting in different places.
Yes,
that's more like that.
Yeah. So it doesn't look foreign to people watching it.
Right.
They accept it as, okay, that happens.
It also looks like a fucking panel situation on a news show.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I've done that too. And picture in picture is big on TV. So
how many are you doing a week? How many you got up
to? I try to do two a week.
Really?
Yeah. It's hard sometimes.
And what's the average audience?
like viewership.
Yeah,
like 200,000 views.
That's good.
Yeah, it's enough to where I feel like, you know, I'm excited that I get it keeps me going.
Okay, but now here comes the bigger question.
Yeah,
what's the business model?
That's a great question. I did get a deal. I've been offered a TV deal,
yeah,
like a pilot kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
But for this, Instagram's going to start monetizing on IGTV, Instagram TV. So I'm hoping to get involved in that because I am making $0 right now. Starting this podcast, and I'll start putting that up on Instagram TV.
Yeah.
And yeah, and if this TV show, if that thing happens, hopefully I'll be able to pay my mortgage.
But you obviously have this attentive crew of a couple hundred thousand. Do you ever think about doing ads?
I have been offered, like, to put a, you know, like, I don't know, a washing machine, some, like, product in that. I've been talking to someone about that. But
as character?
Yeah, just somehow put it in. I did one video where, like, Kim was lost in her house and she didn't know what the washing machine was.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I could have got a free washing machine.
Oh,
like,
I
that
see.
Kind of stuff I will
product
do.
Product placement.
Yeah, if it doesn't affect.
Right.
But only 1 minute on Instagram. There's
you don't have that much time.
You have to compact everything.
Sure.
People tune out if they hear.
But how about, you know, in terms of drawing them to your comedy shows, that audience?
That's been great. I'm able to do, like, small theaters now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All from the Instagram?
All from the Instagram.
Now, do you feel pressure to do the impressions now? That
yes. Because I do the shows now and people will shout out to Caitlin or yeah baby and they'll shout out
oh yeah
stuff
and it's all right with you.
I yeah, I'm happy with it, but I do feel a little bit like I gotta get a Caitlin bit.
Oh right,
really
right.
Fast.
Yeah
and it's hard to get an impression in your act without looking like
right
here's my impression of
yeah right
it's just
it, I think it goes a little
like that's what turns you off about impressions.
Sure.
Probably.
Or back when they turn around, back in the old days, like.
Right. Like, it's unacceptable.
Turn around and you turn back around.
Is it, yeah.
Yeah, it's classic.
It's violating.
Well, you don't have to do it like that. Just, you know, just kind of jump around. People can take it. Like,
the best thing is if you have a story with them, but
sure.
I don't know this. I don't know Caitlin.
Well, you make it up.
All right. But you're the guy who decided on the sheep background. I don't know if I should listen. I don't know.
That's but you know true. What I'm saying. I'm just saying there's a way.
No, you're right. Yeah. No, that's a good idea. I will do that.
Well, you could put a couple of characters. Just why not just do it like your conversations, but just make sure that somehow or another, without hitting it over the head, you introduce the premise in the conversation.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's a way to do it. Melissa Villaseñor does impression of stand-up really well.
Right.
Like that, like what you're saying.
Right.
Like she,
yeah, you can.
There's
do
a
that.
Way to do it.
Sure, man. Get on.
I was. I did have a personal story with Bill Maher, though.
Okay.
I was on his private plane.
We're going to close with it.
Okay.
So it better be solid.
Oh,
is this like?
It's
big,
not a bit. It's not a good
but a
story.
Morning radio ender.
It's
hold
a
on,
beginner.
Here.
Or
let me set you up. So I heard you. You had an interesting encounter.
Could you do the king of Instagram thing
to me? Kyle Dunnigan, the king of Instagram. Great funny stuff, and I, you know,
thank
I was watching.
You.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We get a big kick of it.
Great!
I'm sorry, we get a big kick out of it.
Start again.
Okay, I'm sorry. So Kyle Dunnigan, the king of Instagram, is here.
Thank you.
Back from break, and we all here at the station have been watching those, your Instagrams.
Oh yeah,
and it's great.
Oh.
Yeah, the Trumps, great.
Thank you.
The Jenner, the Kardashians. Mm-hmm. You know, we love that. And you know, Mike Pence, very funny though.
Thank
though
you.
Christy, our weather girl, is actually knows Mike Pence. But
I'm sorry.
I'm not. We don't get political here, but you know what I'm saying.
Sure.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
But we were thinking, sorry, my fucking cough buttons. With the king of Instagram, Kyle Dunnigan. And so you do such a good Bill Maher on your Instagram. Well, they're all great.
Thank you.
Yeah, but Bill Maher, now I heard, correct me if I'm wrong,
mm-hmm.
But I heard that you met Bill Maher, you have an experience with Bill Maher, that you have a problem with Bill Maher.
Yeah. I was on a plane with him once, actually.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Like a commercial?
His private jet.
He's got a private jet. Wouldn't you? How do you like that? Huh?
It's amazing.
Doing all right in show business, that guy, right?
Yes.
So why are you on the private jet with Bill Maher?
Well, my girlfriend at the time.
He's trying to, your girlfriend? He was.
Well, he, we were going to Hawaii and we missed the plane and she told him, and he goes, well, I'm leaving tomorrow to Hawaii.
Who's your girlfriend?
Sarah Silverman.
Oh, at the time was Sarah Silverman. Yeah. So she's a big comic. So why wouldn't he be friends to her? But he doesn't know you, right?
He doesn't know me. He knows me as a guitar guy.
Oh, but guitar
he,
guy.
Yeah, but he,
I heard that.
He loves Sarah.
Yeah.
And so he invited her, and I think he was bummed out.
He was going down there to hang out with Woody Harrelson, probably. That's his
yes,
buddy.
Right. I met Woody too. A great guy. Ever meet Woody?
No.
He was nice. I was very much ignored. I felt a little ostracized, but he noticed and he like went over. I thought that was really nice of him.
Well, we've had Bill on the show a couple of times.
Oh, really?
Sure, but not Woody.
No.
Sarah was here, plugging a tour years ago. But
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm still in character. I don't know.
Sorry. So I get on the plane. He's like, do you people really think there's a God? There's not. Okay. So I get on there. He did it on the plane.
Did he do it over the speaker? Welcome aboard.
Yeah.
You people.
Yeah. And I sit down. He's just kind of ignoring me, which is okay. But it's a small plane.
Yeah.
And I was like, is this in my head? And then Sarah was like, he's not being nice to you.
Yeah.
But I think I get it. He wants to go on vacation and he doesn't know me. And there's a guy he doesn't know and I get it.
But you're on his plane.
Yeah, I was on the plane.
And then what happened?
I've been miserable on private. You think private jets, you're doing good.
Never been on one.
You've never been on one.
Never been on private jet. Don't travel in those circles. This is me, Mark.
You could get your own private jet.
Not really.
You could fly a few places in your private jet.
Well, you mean you hire a private jet? Yeah, you rent it. Right, but it's like, what is it, like $100,000 per flight?
It's like $60,000.
Oof.
That's nothing to you.
For what? No, it is something to me. What do you think I am?
I don't know.
I'm fucking talking to you in my garage.
You're the king of podcasts.
Oh, yeah, it's big money. Big money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you do ads? I haven't heard any ads. You do them later.
Yeah, put them in later. Okay. But not during the conversation.
You don't.
But I'm not private. I'm not private.
You're not a private jet guy.
No.
Well, it does seem like a waste of money, but.
I'll fly first class.
Ooh.
Yeah. That's fine with me.
Different world.
What? You're Mr. Private Plane Guy, I guess, if you're opening person.
I'm coach.
Are you?
Unless I'm tagging along.
Or someone's flying you.
Who someone's invited.
Right.
Private, I'm going to tag along.
So let me just get something clear. Is that the end of the Bill Maher private plane story?
Look, I told you this was not a great story.
Wow.
At the top.
So he...
Well, there was moments that were just uncomfortable. Like he had a set. He did stand up and he was coming back to the table. Everyone's like, oh, he killed. And then I said,
you went to a show that night too?
I didn't go.
Part of your vacation?
I didn't go.
Uh-huh.
He just had a show. That's why he was going to Hawaii.
So the night before.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then, he came back to the table after the show and everyone was like, oh, Bill killed. So we sat down and go, hey, Bill, I heard the audience was pretty rough.
Yeah.
I was like trying to make a joke of the opposite of what it was. That's comedy, right? And it wasn't the right thing.
You didn't read the room right.
I didn't.
No, because Bill, maybe if you know him really well, you can bust his balls, but he doesn't, I've never seen him handle that well.
Yeah.
Ever.
I also tend to go, when I'm nervous for the wrong, lose your intelligence on what to say.
You one of those guys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Working on it.
So you see Bill Maher and you're like, hey, Bill, there is a God. You're stupid. I'm sorry. What'd I say?
Kinda.
Yeah.
I'm aware of it now, though.
Uh-huh. Well, that's good.
That's all I can do.
Self-awareness is good.
The most important thing.
Well, I hope everything works out.
Thank you.
And you've always got the dancing.
I can always go back to
and
that.
And the guitar.
Yes.
Yeah. But I'm glad that the Instagram's it's exciting to pop in a medium that you have complete control over.
I'm telling you, I was midlife crisising.
And now
last
the king
year.
Of Instagram.
Now the king.
Wow. Great. Congratulations.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Good talking to you.
You too.
Kyle Dunnigan. Go see all his weirdness on Instagram. Also YouTube, Twitter. No, I have no musical instrument with me. None. That was a jazz-phrased improvisational humming. It's hard to learn. But if you focus, you can do it. Boomer lives!